This episode of the Startup Podcast is sponsored by OPM Entrepreneurial Services. OPM is the premier provider of CFO and accounting services to the entrepreneurial community. For those companies needing sophisticated insight and direction, OPM will become your part-time CFO, giving guidance and direction in risk management, fund sourcing, and financial modeling. For companies not yet sized for CFO services but needing solid accounting practices and procedures, OPM offers a robust controller package that gives you and your investors peace of mind knowing the books are in order. Find them online at opmfinancial.com. Thanks for coming back to the Startup Podcast, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. I'm Dan Vonderheide. I do this once a week where I bring somebody in who's working in the startup scene around Louisville and just talk to them about what they're doing and what they've done in the past, and we try to learn from that. I really appreciate you listening. I've made some changes recently that might be wreaking havoc with my feed. Changing an RSS feed in iTunes is pretty difficult, so I'm still sort of struggling with that. As always, I encourage you to listen through the Stitcher app. It is smart radio. It's available to you on your iPhone or your Android device. Hopefully coming to Windows Phone very soon. You know I'm very partial to that. So make sure you download that app. And if you like the show, great, man. I appreciate that. I hope you're listening through Stitcher. This week's guest is Ken Marshall. He's with a company called Food Care. Ken's a great story because they're people that were looking around the country for a place to bring their startup, and they chose Louisville. And we get into why he chose Louisville and what he likes about the city. He's very enthusiastic about it. He's very smart. All these guys are Silicon Valley guys, and they're diving into the nutrition category with their app. It's called Food Care. Sort of in beta at this point, and he talks some about that, but we get into his history and the importance of this nutrition and what exactly they're trying to do with their company. And we talk about Louisville, which is, of course, our focus here. So Ken Marshall is a great guest, and I hope you enjoy it. Here we go on the Startup Podcast. How did you guys end up here? I mean, are you a dual city startup situation?
I guess the first thing would be our startup is very much about local, very much about executing in local markets.
Okay.
And San Francisco is not a great place to do that necessarily. It's way out there. It's a way different place than most of America. The Midwest, Mid-South, the South, they're very different places. New England,
no doubt.
Boston has some similarities, right? But most of America is very different. And so for a business that was going to have to go from town to town and be hyper-local – it's a pain to manage things from San Francisco. You fly all over the place. You spend all your money on travel and whatever else. From here, we can drive everywhere. We can be in any market we want to be in either an hour and a half, 2 hour flight, or in a 4 or 5 hour drive. We can be all sorts of places.
Access to 40% of the country within whatever that statistic is.
50, yes,
yeah,
exactly.
They put it out there.
Yeah, it's a little statistic, right?
They put it out there.
No, they're our friends. They got a lot of good statistics. But initially you could think of Louisville as a forward command center for executing our go-to-market strategy and working in local markets and having support and closer support than San Francisco and all the other things, right? So I was looking for a city that had that kind of an attribute. At Louisville, and we looked at dozens, Louisville stood out because we're talking about our business is at the intersection of the food industry and the healthcare industry, right?
Right.
And we address the needs of individuals with special dietary needs, dietary restrictions, often related to a nutrition-related chronic disease.
And there's nowhere in America where there's more chronic disease than Kentucky.
Kentucky's high on the list. we don't need to debate semantics. Who's number one, right? But it's up there. But seniors have chronic conditions, 80%, right? 50% of seniors have two or more. So Louisville is very strong in what three categories right now, besides liquor and horse racing and delivery.
Tobacco.
We're talking about tobacco. We're talking about the food industry. With our Yum ecosystem, Texas Roadhouse, which is a phenomenally well-run company, and they've got an ecosystem spun out of there. All those other companies, right, that we all know. And then we've got healthcare. Obviously, see, everyone here knows this is Humana country. Right. And so you've got an ecosystem built around a major, major payer. And you've got also very strong providers. You know, there's four or five providers that are very busy in town that are pretty sophisticated, actually, right? Doing a lot of work. And senior health and nutrition. So you've got your Signatures, your Trilogies, your Atrias of the world. So when you combine those three things, really, from our perspective, I felt Louisville stood out as being a uniquely good fit.
So you did research on several cities.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And then you did compare and contrast, and you chart out pros and cons and everything. Who else was in the running? Just curious.
Well, I would say Nashville was a strong contender, very strong in healthcare. A lot of money, a lot of things going on there. We looked at a bigger city like Chicago, looked at even Cincinnati, Kansas City, UnitedHealthcare's backyard. I wanted to put us in the backyard of a major payer.
Okay.
That was an important sort of – I didn't have like a formal mathematical weighting system or anything that was smart, you know, a little more intuitive than that. But I would say those are cities that particularly stood out that are sort of in this region. And this is the kind of mid-south, lower Midwest –
yeah.
Upper South was sort of what I was gunning for.
This is the cradle of civilization in the United States. It's Louisville, Kentucky. It all happens here.
Anything's possible.
That's right.
As it turns out.
That's right.
So,
well,
yeah.
Let's talk about the program, what you guys are working on.
Sure. So what
just the overview, I guess.
Yeah, what we've developed is a nutrition-related – I'm sorry, a next-generation nutrition platform that is both meant to give insights, what we call nutrition insights, to consumers – and also support the food industry itself in terms of transforming the food delivered to individuals. So we'll talk about the consumer side. Most nutrition apps out there are delivering nutrition facts on food items, maybe allowing you to log things, particularly calories.
Sure.
That's actually inappropriate for many individuals. 150 million Americans have a nutrition-related chronic disease. If I have end-stage renal disease, my dietary restrictions are totally different from somebody who has gout or diabetes, or high cholesterol, hypertension, or you name it. They're all very different considerations. Now, calories is an important factor for everyone. Calories drives obesity. Obesity ends up driving whatever condition you're predisposed to getting or that you just stumbled across in your high bacon diet, right? Whatever it is. So what I really saw was that it wasn't the nutrition facts that needed to be delivered to individuals. If I've got type 2 diabetes, I've got hypertension, and I'm pre-CKD – chronic kidney disease, which, by the way, is lots of people would fit this mold. How am I supposed to keep track of phosphorus, potassium, calories, sodium, cholesterol, and, you know, carbs and whatever else?
Well, you could probably get all of that information on a nutritional label, but what do you do with it? I mean, it's just essentially raw numbers, right?
Yeah. And you know, what's the context?
Exactly.
So, you know, there's 145 milligrams of cholesterol and I've got high cholesterol.
I have no idea what that means. Like, you know, I guess if I had a chronic disease, I would have hopefully a healthcare professional saying you can't eat more than 75 milligrams of whatever.
Sure. But then they're going to give you six different nutrients to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, how many Americans, let's be realistic, how many people in our country can manage six different nutrients throughout a course of a day, adding them up and figuring it out, knowing what the real dietary guidelines are across all nutrients? People can't handle that, you know.
I would say that most people don't manage breakfast well enough. Like, they're just like, I'm hungry. I got to eat something. I got to put down. I don't care what's in it. And that's how they get into the situation in the first place.
Well, and also, you know, the USDA dietary guidelines are super great. I should probably get back on point. But
sorry
the
about
USDA
that.
Dietary
I tend to knock people off point.
I noticed. the USDA guidelines are great, but they don't feel personal to me with my hypertension, my type 2, and my pre-CKD. I'm not sure what they really mean. And quite frankly, they're not actually meant for me. I'm supposed to be following the American Diabetes Association's dietary guidelines around carbs and things like that, looking at the National Kidney Foundation's dietary guidelines around phosphorus and potassium, and National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute, for example,'s guidelines around sodium or cholesterol, whatever it's going to be. How do I even know these guidelines exist? And if I know they exist, again, how do I track them throughout the day? So what we're delivering is a platform that allows a user to give us their basic health profile, age, gender, height, weight, activity level, and their chronic diseases and disease stages.
Okay.
We've worked with all the major health associations and institutes over the last year to automate the standard dietary guidelines for their conditions.
Okay.
Or multiple conditions.
So that's in a big database somewhere that
Yeah. So an individual, boom, we presto create a profile for you. Now you've got a dietary guideline. Okay. What we then do is we show you for any food item, and in our beta release app of a month or so ago, we're just doing restaurant dishes, but we've got, you know, snacks and frozen and prepared meals, and we've got recipes and beverages and vitamin supplements, all that kind of stuff. So now I can look at a food item and get context. Which of these recipes actually passes my dietary guidelines?
Okay.
Or if I've got multiple conditions, we allow registered dietitians in our Dietitian Edition platform product, because we think it's very important that dietitians have a meaningful way to engage with patients. They can personalize your dietary guidelines. Nutrient level, ingredient, some ingredients. You've got gout. Great things like salmon have a moderately high purine count. It's not really necessarily for you. You need to maybe watch out for it. So again, the idea of what is healthy for me starts changing, right? So you can dietitians can personalize guidelines, and we're able to show you for any food item instantly which ones are appropriate for you, and if it's not, what went wrong. And then the next level of sort of this next generation approach we take is, rather than just logging what I've eaten, what I'm actually doing is I'm dynamically changing my dietary guidelines throughout the day based on what I ate for breakfast. So if I'm on 150 milligram cap of cholesterol and I have 140 milligrams for breakfast,
right,
your new dietary guideline for lunch and dinner is going to be 5 milligrams. If you have 10 milligrams for lunch, we are only going to suggest that the dishes that pass your dietary guidelines for dinner are those that have no cholesterol whatsoever.
Okay.
It doesn't work like that for every nutrient, every condition, but you get the general kind of idea.
It's a lot of data to crunch in there too.
Yeah. And this was something that impacted our launch timing, in that we have both on the consumer side, you've got hundreds of attributes associated with your dietary guidelines. Food items themselves have 44 nutrients. They've got different kind of ingredients in them. Each ingredient has its own attribute. Is it kosher? Is it halal? Is it vegan? Is it GMO? Whatever your restrictions are. And we have to perform hundreds of millions of computations every time a user wants to access some records.
Can I eat this Krispy Kreme?
Yeah. How is this going to fit in my day?
Right.
How bad is it going to blow it out? Which would be bad. But although there's some things that are worse that you wouldn't think. So yeah, we had to get pretty – I mean our technology stack is kind of a Rails, Postgres, and then heavy, heavy Hadoop. And without that, there's just no way to way to do this.
Is food your – what's your thing then? Are you like a nutrition ninja guy, or are you a programming guy, or like what's
– No.
What are you bringing to the table? I mean you seem very passionate about this and very knowledgeable.
Yeah, well, so, we've picked up a little bit in the last year or so. We were initially looking at a company on a consulting project that needed some help figuring out its model that was just like nutrition analysis for restaurants. And we were asked to take a couple days look at it, and we looked at it. My team, that's what we do a lot of back in Silicon Valley, is just working with companies typically that are more than 4 years old that kind of realize that they've got some traction, but they know they don't know everything. And they're open to coaching and having new partners come in and take on some responsibility for them. But we really disliked in our initial analysis this concept of restaurant nutrition analysis in and of itself to put calories on a menu. We didn't think there was anything there. And that was that would have been just about the end of it.
I think, but the public perceives that that's a pretty good thing. If you can see calories and fat grams and what, like sodium, whatever it is that they want it put on.
I think calories is obviously terrific. And
step in the right direction, at least.
It's definitely a step in the right direction. But again, who's using it? Calories are misleading. I could show you 100 different dishes within a few miles of here that have 555 calories and 2,800 milligrams of sodium. Now, a year ago, I didn't know what that meant. But your daily recommended allowance is right around, let's just say, 2,100 to 2,300 milligrams a day. There's dishes that are on the lighter, healthier side of the menu, 555 calories, that is definitely a cause of hypertension around town.
Well, they dump a bunch of salt to make it taste good.
They bunch dump salt, right? Or you've got another diabetic condition, and dish looks like it might be low in carbs, and yet suddenly one of these ingredients is loaded in carbs, and you didn't know it. And you can't infer that. You've got to kind of see that. So the calories is helpful, but again, half of America has a nutrition-related chronic disease. Yes, and many of them are on a weight management plan. But at this stage, they've got a secondary consideration as well that's affecting an organ that's getting ready to go into shutdown mode.
Yeah.
Or some other thing that just we don't want to see happen. So
is this it's an app. And is it something that is solely targeted to people that already have a condition? Or is this something you can use for preventative management of your health care, like a proactive management of your health.
Yeah, definitely preventative as well. And so we deal with – our anchor is sort of nutrition-related chronic diseases. No one else explicitly lives quite there. But we also handle any dietary preference. Right? Again, kosher or you know, at some point non-GMO or whatever it's going to be. So we handle that. And then even food preferences we can factor in. Any kind of attribute against a recipe or a food product – with our stack, we can incorporate that into an attribute that helps us determine which foods are appropriate for you.
Okay.
Part of sort of the elegance of what we've built behind the scenes. So it goes well beyond that now. But what I would say is that an individual, a 23-year-old male that's in perfectly fine health, may be interested in the calories, but they're not looking at it much beyond that. And the restaurant operator, probably most importantly, doesn't believe it's actually helping them do business. Believe it's positively driving sales. Now, our approach, now we've got this platform that the restaurant can put their recipes in, or a food manufacturer, or a corporate cafeteria, or a senior living community, you name it. In real time, as they're adding ingredients, we're telling them all the chronic health conditions their dish is going to be appropriate for. They dump a tablespoon of salt in, they start seeing dishes go, you know, conditions go red.
Wow.
You just blew it. They load a bunch of broccoli in it, that's high in phosphorus, bad for people with advanced renal disease, you just lost them. So in a city of 100-
Did you just say broccoli is bad for you?
Wouldn't you never believe it?
I would never believe that. Never in a million years.
Well, again, I'm relatively new to this world. Not relative. I'm new to the world. But there are a lot of food products that are completely inappropriate for
certain conditions.
80,000 people here, 4 million people here, 400,000 people there. All day long we see it. So, you know, we can help those operators. And our story for operators is a little different. So our story for a restaurant operator is – in a city of 150,000 people, the hypertensives alone, high blood pressure, meaning they need low sodium diet, every day they spend $180,000 in restaurants. Every single day, city of 150,000 people. Our platform's $33 a month. You'll find out you have four or five or six dishes.
For the restaurant?
For the restaurant.
Okay,
monthly subscription.
Okay.
You've got free for just straight up nutrition analysis. But if you want to publish to our API – so that users of our app, users of our partner apps, we're all about API and other people's apps, really, consuming our services.
OPA.
You know, at the end of the day, for $33 a month, you probably have five or six dishes that you could be targeting to people with high blood pressure that actually care. That 23-year-old, nobody's going to convince nobody that kid cares about what is health appropriate or not. But half the country has a chronic condition. Some percentage of that – and by the way, they spend – in aggregate, over $500 billion a year on food.
Ugh.
And some percentage of them cares, and there's enough of a market there that, you know, folks we talk to start realizing, oh, actually, maybe we should start thinking about what a health-appropriate meal is. But calories is just this one little – frankly, a dish that's 200 calories over but is low in everything else, I can tell you based on looking at hundreds and hundreds of dishes in our system, that's actually a pretty good dish, all things considered, in America
right now. So what would be your biggest – I don't want to say obstacle, but you wouldn't have any natural predators or opponents in this, would you? Like a not a governmental organization, but I don't know. I'm having a hard time coming up with what I'm trying to ask, so the answer is probably no.
Yeah,
everybody probably thinks this is a pretty good idea.
Oh, in terms of like, are there regulatory concerns, or oversight concerns, or specific, liabilities that we're taking on. We don't so there are startups that are in nutrition. So nutrition, as you know, hot space. A lot of people want to do apps in nutrition. One approach you see a lot of startups doing is creating a score of their own, derivation.
Hmm.
We've consulted physicians and dietitians. This is the score we came up with. And they'll put a number on a dish. Again, that number I think is
– Weight Watchers points.
Weight Watchers
points. That's calories, though.
Yeah, and Weight Watchers points is tied to weight loss, and it's safely anchored there. But if I tell you this is a 93 out of 100 healthy, and it's loaded in broccoli, and you're on end-stage renal disease, and you're not
it's no 93
necessarily sophisticated enough to like have read your whole card of what you can and can't eat, you might eat that every day for a year, and again, kidney going shutdown mode, bad situation all the way around. So scoring, I think that is an issue. I think there are liabilities there. For us – We don't create any guidelines.
So you're just given raw information. This is what
we've built a platform that automates the dietary guidance, at least first blush, of major health associations and institutes. They've disclaimed away liabilities, however they've done so, and we've passed that information through to our users. Most importantly, though, we give you the ability to have your own personal dietitian personalize your dietary guidance. We think that's the most important thing out there. And to that extent, your dietitian is somewhat responsible for the dietary guidance that she's given you. If the American Diabetes Association or National Kidney Foundation were to give wildly inaccurate dietary guidelines out, then potentially there could be issues there. But it doesn't really necessarily rest in what we're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, most health care payers and providers and systems and clinics and everyone else that we're working with, this is – our solution's valuable to them because traditionally they write down a bunch of instructions on a piece of paper and they give it to somebody who basically is known to not know how to eat appropriately and who can't pull it all together. And now they just overwhelm them with 10 more nutrients and guidelines throughout a day and a week and, you know, medicine or whatever it would be. So we give – we think we give that individual trying to get a hold of their dietary restrictions a fighting chance to figure out, you know, what it is they're going to be able to eat. So,
work on your business, not in it. Reach out to the professionals at OPM Entrepreneurial to find out how 20 years of experience working with startups can help grow your business. Pre-revenue through IPO, OPM can put the accounting and fundraising procedures in place that give you confidence in your company's financial position. These guys are not accountants working with entrepreneurs. They're entrepreneurs who just happen to do accounting. OPM Accounting and Equity Crowdfunding, find them online at opmfinancial.com. And we've talked a lot about the app and sort of you've been dipping your toes in this for a year.
Yeah.
You weren't a nutrition guy. You are now. So, you know, how did you come to do this?
Yeah, well, you know, we saw the space of this new, you know, we looked at food and we look at healthcare companies a lot back in the Valley and we were interested in acquiring
one. Who's we, though? I'm trying to dig at your history.
Folks that I work with that, you know, are kind of startuppers, ex-consultant types that work on my core team. And we didn't like the nutrition analysis for restaurants by itself. We realized that on the other side of it, though, the consumers needed more access to that information and we could provide it more intelligently than it had ever done before. And then we realized then we could turn around and make it more of a marketing platform. You know, make the restaurant nutrition analysis more of a marketing opportunity for them to reach an individual whose husband has gout and she wants to take her family to a place and say, here's the two or three dishes that I'd love for you to try, right? So we saw an opportunity there. We recognized that, you know, $1 trillion food industry, very large food industry.
Yeah, huge.
No wonder these folks around Louisville have done so well, right?
Yeah. We love to go out to eat around here. I can tell you that much.
And healthcare industry is $2.6 trillion, which, you know, some number around that, some 75% of which, you know, David Jones Jr. Did a TEDx talk here in Louisville where he spoke to 75% of that $2.6 trillion is lifestyle related. Hmm. Tobacco, stress, fitness, probably most important, nutrition. So that's a $1.9 trillion cost to the American economy. Some significant percentage of that is attributed to poor nutrition of our nation. So in that, we thought, well, let's look at this a little longer. There's, you know, all this cost. There's all this spend. Everyone could win here if we actually thought this thing through. So that's basically, you know, it didn't take long to develop the vision for what we're doing. And then we went to, you know, we built the platform from the ground up from Codeline 1. We got towards, started building code basically around February. Really 3 or 4 months of just kind of spinning our wheels with the code. By June, July, we actually started really ramping up our Rails stack. Hit September, started realizing how much computational complexity was at play in our stack.
No doubt.
So we had to go implement a pretty sophisticated implementation of Hadoop to handle all of the calculations we need to perform. And released our beta app again in December. We've just recently, you know, finished our first generation API. That's published out in Mashery for our partners. And we're really focused on API. So we've been really looking at our partner ecosystem. We're getting almost one request a day for access to our API, which is already a good sign because we haven't really been talking about it too much. So
what's sort of the company background and like your funding situation? Who are your partners? Who'd you come form this team with? The we that you are referring to.
So my background, again, I'm the biggest rambler around. Sorry. I come out of the consulting and startup world about, I want to say, 7
California
years ago.
Born and bred.
Yeah, okay. Actually, yeah, rare. Although my father's from Kentucky.
Oh, good.
As it turns out, from Paducah, but then he went out west for school and
say Hadoop Paducah 10 times fast.
I can't do that. Well, going back a little ways, I was on an early team at Accenture. We were building the first cloud computing practice, and in the firm based in San Francisco, centered around the Salesforce.com ecosystem, which was still emerging. And cloud computing is antithetical to the big consulting firm's models. Most partners at a big consulting firm got there selling, you know, $20 million SAP projects, not $300,000 Salesforce projects or Workday or whatever it might be. So we had to go in and kind of, you know, figure things out. But where I started really looking at were the early stage first generation SaaS companies that were coming through the door requesting partnerships with us. And I recognized that their economic model was changing dramatically. The amount of money they got on their deals were very different. Their team structures had to change. They had a lot of issues. And so I did that work at Accenture. I did some very similar work at Deloitte to help, same thing, you know, get these things off the ground.
Working for the man.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. And at this point, I don't think the man would take me back, but that's where we came from. And so I basically I came out of Deloitte to found a company focused on helping SaaS 1.0 generation companies, and especially the second generation of cloud companies, which are lean startups with 3 or 4 people, typically all dev, maybe no experience in enterprise software, no experience with channel sales, no experience, you know, in highly competitive markets, that especially markets that are dominated by superpowers like, you know, the Microsofts and Googles and everyone else in the world. And we realized that they needed significant help with sales, scaling sales and channel.
Gotcha.
And so we started picking up clients left and right, mostly funded companies that whose cost structures were totally upside down. You know, these are at Deloitte and Accenture, fortunately enough, you know, a company wants to partner with one of those firms, you can ask them to come in, bring all their financials, bring the economics of a deal. You get right under the hood and see what's going on. And these are companies that were losing money for 2 to 3 to 4 years on deals, You know, but they're not Verizon. They can't really exactly afford to do that.
Sure.
And so we started advising companies in that way. We moved more and more into marketing and strategy. More and more companies needed that. And then we just started to, you know, looking at acquiring companies and just taking them over, fixing them, and then, you know, sending them on their way or whatever. And that's sort of how we saw into this opportunity. And ultimately we said, you know, this is one that we can just do ourselves. Look, there's an entirely new world emerging around nutrition, around healthcare, in particular the Affordable Care Act and what that leads to on the ACO side, Accountable Care Organization side, in terms of preventative capped costs. And nutrition is going to play a role in that. The food industry has no idea how to really engage in a sophisticated manner with consumers.
They just want to bake good pies.
Yeah, well, fair enough.
We just want to make delicious chicken.
Fair enough. But if you want to target these individuals,
yeah,
then
I got you.
Modify it this way.
And, well, I'm just saying they're not thinking about that stuff. They're like, we want to put out a product that's going to sell to people.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, that's changed a little bit in that we see that there's a lot of heat out there. It's just unstructured heat. People want to eat healthier, but they don't know how.
Right.
I want to manage my hypertension plus cholesterol.
Well,
I don't know what I don't even know what to yell at my food company in terms of what to give me, because I don't understand what my guidelines are.
We'll just let the mayor outlaw giant sodas and he'll take care of it for us.
Yeah, no comment.
Right.
But yeah, you know, so you know, that's basically how we saw this opportunity. And we were working on a few different things, and then we decided, look, this is one that we could do for, you know, a couple of years. It's fun. It's we really wanted to work in food. We really wanted to work in healthcare. It's right at the intersection of the two. It's fun in a sense.
Well, your Twitter bio says you're, quote, working on a variety of startups.
My personal Twitter bio?
I guess that's where I found you online, the website.
For now, we're on one.
Well, on one.
We do
Is this your first?
No.
Is the leader and CEO?
Sort of? No, it's not. It's okay. Not. So I ran our consulting shop. And then I also had a startup around 10 years ago called Sempire that was corporate governance software We developed a platform to help board directors and officers manage stewardship and oversight functions in a company. And so that was a good experience. And then, you know, now we're in this one. This is the only business we're working on right now. We do definitely know what our next company is going to be.
Planning ahead.
We don't know when we'll get to it. I think that'll be a Louisville-based company as well.
Oh, good. Do you live here then?
We split our time. So we have, you know, we have places in San Francisco. I would say we spend 90% of our time between April-ish and November here. And then over the last 2 months, Bay Area and travel and, you know, on an ongoing basis. For me, I'm out in the field, town to town and market to market and working with our partners in the field. So 2 weeks out of the month, I'm sort of, you know,
it's a tough life, man.
Some 4 points.
Are you used to it at this point? It was just...
Well, you know, the nice thing is only two, 3 hour drives from place to place. It's not so bad. You know?
Okay.
And then before you know it, you're back here.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can go
long enough to listen
places.
To a series of the Startup Podcast.
Absolutely.
Load up your iPhone.
We're mostly here. A lot of our partners, as you could guess, are Bay Area based. You know, a lot of tech, food tech, a lot of health, a lot of medical device companies are
but
all.
But you've done some there. Job creation in Louisville to a certain extent. Yes?
We brought on a couple people. Yeah. Okay. And I think we did like 7 interns last summer, all paid. And I'm sure we'll replicate that. And for anyone out listening, you know, we are actively looking for people. So we are
fit to do what?
Well, anyone that is actually super, super strong in Rails or maybe Hadoop, we would love to add somebody local to our team in those regards. And then on the business side, business development, you know, business development / sales support, partner support. All that kind of stuff.
So you guys are out. I mean, your app is out. You're in beta, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Well, we released a beta, frankly, to make like investors happy and, you know, get new investors over the hump. And so we released our beta, which gives you a sense of where we're going. Next month's release is going to be a whole nother level of sophistication in terms of what we deliver. But again, it's really not about our app. It's about any food app that wants to deliver nutrition insights, right? Whether that be chronic disease related or just dietary preference related, we think they're going to want to consume our services because they're probably not going to want to go build what we've built.
Any
mHealth app, you know, that want, you know, so we've got, for example, blood glucose monitors, FDA cleared, that we're being embedded in. And so now you're logging your blood glucose, or that's happening automatically, and you're logging how much insulin you took, and you're logging your food. And then our partner is developing analytics on top of that to help you understand, well, which foods are actually good for your blood sugar or not, right? So it's more about consuming our services where you're already, you know, in some wellness portal or you're using some food app in your local town or whatever it might be. It's much more important to us that our partner is able to make use of our functionality to, you know, enhance the value of what they're delivering to their user base.
Cool. From working in two different cities, you have it's a year old company.
Just about,
essentially
just
a new
exactly
product. Like, what's the biggest obstacle for you as a guy who's leading a startup, who's trying to, you know, work with partners? I'm sure you have to interact with investors and sort of answer to those guys and do these board meetings. Like, what's the biggest thing you've had to adjust to from a day-to-day perspective and just managing your life as a CEO?
You know, I've been doing this, you know, running our company before this had, you know, over 100 people.
Oh, gotcha.
And I was the CEO there. So I think I'd have to answer at this stage. I'm just used to it, just how it is, sort of, especially once we have 12 people in our company now, right?
Okay.
Not that many people, but anything over 4 basically means that you've got people issues to deal with every single day.
No doubt.
You know, and every morning. If I get through 10 a.m., then there's a chance it could be a pretty good day, right?
Yeah.
But there's always issues, and there's always some crisis, and there's always something.
Somebody took my sandwich out of the refrigerator in the kitchenette.
If that's all I had to broker, that'd be a happy day. See, exactly. If that's all that happened by 10 a.m., I already know.
You're dealing with programmers. They're arguing about who left their coffee ring on the Batman comic.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm kidding, programmers.
That would be,
They're all going, what? It's a big deal.
They're golden gods. I would say that of all the little lessons or whatever, until you're at a stage where the money's coming in enough that you find yourself on a beach taking a week off on a little trip or something, I hate to say it. I hope it doesn't come across as, you know, really bad in a way, because I think there's negative connotations with this. But I think you have to micromanage a little bit. And you have to know what everyone's working on almost every day. And everyone else has to know what everyone else is working on, because that means total transparency.
Collaboration is the buzzword, right? If there's a transparent, open environment and everybody sees what everybody's doing, then there's more – the collaboration environment exists.
Collaboration goes up, especially – I mean, I think the word communication to me is more important than even collaboration in a sense. But to me, the word that counts, you know, in the earlier stages here is accountability, because it's not hard. You know, you're dealing with all these issues, and, it, you know, as an entrepreneur, you don't always feel like you can just sit there and yell at somebody who you're paying, you know, half of what they were making down the street.
Because they took a chance on you.
Because they're taking a chance or whatever else. They don't see it that way once they're on the other side. And most, you know, CEOs that are listening know exactly what I'm talking about. Holding people accountable is a real challenge. Holding people accountable, holding the whole business accountable to milestones, milestones have to be planned out. You have to have an operating plan. This is where we're going to be in a year. Well, then that means we need to be here in a half a year, here at the end of the quarter, here at the end of this month.
Okay. I was wondering how granular that gets with the...
It gets pretty granular.
Okay.
And it's okay. People fail. I mean, you miss milestones left and right. You figure out then you can actually manage. Okay. We are getting destroyed over here. So I'm not going to have that asset, meaning I'm not going to have that as a component of our strategy in 6 weeks, meaning what changes do I need to make? And you can make those changes. Most entrepreneurs out there, they're either really resourceful and they can work out of jams, or they won't be doing it very long. And so, you know, from my perspective, I think that having total accountability on basically nearly a daily basis, certainly a weekly basis, everyone issues a weekly report. What'd you work on this week? How much time did you spend? What are you going to work on next week? What's going to get done? How much time are you going to spend doing that? What are the issues that are concerning you that you're tracking? What decisions need to be made by Ken or somebody else? There's a little section in there that's like, what's your gripe of the week, that gets colorful and personal, mostly on me.
Batman comics.
I strip that out.
They're honest with you about?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Get off my ass.
After five or six times, 5 or 6 weeks of, you know, somebody doing this, then they realize that you take it seriously. You talk to them about it. Some things get fixed. Some things you explain why it's not going to get fixed. And everyone's on the same page now. And so people go over the top sharing gripes. I mean, those sections are, although.
You could do a coffee table book.
My
startup gripes.
Yeah, it might not help us get funded in another round. But you know, that kind of approach, I strip that out. Everything else, everyone sees. On the sales side, we do a daily report. And that is, you know, what new... Everyone that's not a developer in our business is responsible for spending at least 1 to 4-ish hours or all day, if that's all they do, doing business development or supporting a deal or marketing or something. Physically doing something to support revenue and deal and partners and whatever, you know, onboarding or whatever. And everyone sees that. And so if you're the one person that's not a developer that didn't do something to support getting the business over this next hump and then over the next hump after that, you know, 1 or 2 times, yeah, you had a busy day, whatever. 2-3 weeks starts becoming obvious. And there's probably no more important thing, I think, right now at a stage like we're at, like a lot of companies around here at, is get that machine moving very, very fast. And so, again, the question was, you know, I don't know, how do you do your job or how do you manage your job or how do you handle it?
Not even your life. Like, do you got to make time for working out or playing video games or loosening up? I mean, that sort of thing. Is that a huge challenge?
I think that's a huge challenge for most, you know, founders, because it doesn't really necessarily always work that way.
But you're consumed. I guess if this is your baby, you're consumed with it, and it doesn't feel like work.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like work, but it doesn't feel like play. It feels like something else.
Okay.
I'm not calling it a burden or something, you know, but people know it's not
responsibility.
It's just the way it is. That's just what your life is, and so I don't think that. I don't know if I think of it that way, but I can give you a story real quick.
Yeah.
It's a quick story. Yeah. So there was a great in my first company some 10 years ago, Deloitte handles does events for startups every month or all time. And they have great speakers. and it's CEOs only. And I'll make it really quick, but this guy gets up and he goes, today we're going to talk about work-life balance for the CEO of a startup that's trying to make it. And so everyone, and this is a topic that a lot of people that, you know, have startups struggle with, and his point, and I'm not totally endorsing this point, but the point is made. He goes, all right, let's talk about work-life balance. Let's get real, though. Let's not talk about, you know, finding me time, finding wife time and kid time and finding sports and recreation time and finding, you know, all this other stuff. Because, A, number one, it's not always realistic that you can find that time.
Sure.
And, B, for many of you, it's not even who you are anyhow. You're actually a different person.
Yeah.
And for many of you—
That's harsh truth, man.
It's not in a Northern California, you know, utopian environment where everything is like perfectly idealistic. That's not a popular way to look at things, right?
This is the Midwest too, family first. I mean,
it can't
be a popular way to look at things around here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for some people, that's a reality.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so he says, what I'm going to talk to you today about is how to manage your life so that you can be optimally focused on your work performance and your company's execution. Okay, step one, or part one, family neutralization. We have to neutralize the negative effects that your wife and kids can have on your ability to focus on work.
Oh, that is harsh, man.
And we got some rules here. There are 8 days that you will not miss. Your assistant knows that you won't miss these days. You don't schedule events, da-da-da-da, whatever they are. Wife, birthday, this day, anniversary, whatever. You'll never miss those 8 days. Any graduation that's happening that year, you won't miss that day. So they get those 8 days. That's concession one on your part. Number two. And anyhow, he went through this hour of all these rules that basically, you know, were designed so that you could survive and, you know, really focus on work, which was a very fascinating conversation. Really woke me up in terms of, Jesus, wow, this is really...
Yeah, that's real.
You know, that's actually not totally... There are truths in what's being suggested here. And a lot of those people, I mean, they were shaken, like, this is going to be so helpful for me. And a couple people, I'm sure, were like, maybe I need to get out of this racket.
Yeah, this is not for me. I mean, but somebody draws a line in the sand like that, you're going to fall on one side or the other.
Yeah. For me, my personal feeling about it is that, you know, all this stuff and running companies and, you know, startups are very hard, and we don't need to belabor that point. Everyone understands that. The things that really grate me are team members that are shirking, you know, people who aren't buying in to what they signed up for. People not delivering on things that they said they'd deliver on. I mean, where I suspect that maybe they didn't give it quite the right effort. Those internal things are what I think really cause deep angst and frustration. And I think for a lot of founders, cause a lot of more of the turmoil and angst that really drags them down. Whenever you know your team is working their asses off, it actually is not so hard to be an inspiring leader from the front, you know. And so,
sure.
But if you haven't got that in check... And I see a lot of companies where, you know, the founders, I don't think they really are totally confident in each individual on their team that they're really totally going for it as much as they are, at least some, you know, relative amount. And so for me, until a company is far enough along where I've got competent lieutenants running every different function and I can just meet with them once a week to find out how things are going, you've just got to have a little bit of some micromanagement, I think, in place to assure yourself that everything's on track and you're moving forward.